Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the AT&T Fourth Quarter Earnings Release 2013 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. Should you require assistance during this call, you may press star and then zero, and an operator will assist you offline. Also, as a reminder, today's teleconference is being recorded. At this time, we will turn the conference call over to your host, Senior Vice President of Investor Relations, Ms. Susan Johnson. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Tony. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. It's great to have you with us today. I'm Susan Johnson, Head of Investor Relations for AT&T. Joining me on the call today is Randall Stephenson, AT&T's Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, and John Stevens, AT&T's Chief Financial Officer. Randall will discuss our 2013 highlights and then close with a strategic perspective and 2014 outlook. And John will cover our results. Then we'll follow up with questions and answers. Let me remind you, our earnings material is available on the Investor Relations page of the AT&T website. That's www.att.com/investor.relations. Of course, I need to cover our Safe Harbor Statement, which is on slide 3. This presentation and comments may contain forward-looking statements. They're subject to risks. Results may differ materially. Further details on our SEC filings and on AT&T's website. I would now like to turn the call over to AT&T's Chairman and CEO, Randall Stephenson. Randall?
Thanks, Susan. And good afternoon, everyone, and Happy New Year. 2013 was an interesting year for the industry, and I would suggest to you it's probably a formative year. We saw old competitors stake out new positions. We saw most of the players significantly change the value proposition for their customers. And with smartphone penetration beginning to hit some impressive levels, we've seen new business models emerge around LTE in the cloud. In our case, that includes things like connected homes, connected cars, video, and mobile business solutions. But from our view, the most important development that we're seeing is that the entire U.S. telecom industry is investing aggressively in advanced networks. Today in the U.S., four national carriers and dozens of regional providers are building out LTE, and you just don't see that happening anywhere else in the world. The industry is now competing on price, customer service, technological innovation, and most importantly, network coverage and quality. And we think this speaks volumes about where the country's public policy has landed concerning spectrum and the importance of light touch regulation. We think it's very, very important to maintain that approach as we move forward. Because of these things, the industry is healthy, and it is attracting a lot of investment. So let me give you a few highlights, and then what I'm going to do is turn it over to John, and he'll take you through the details of the quarter. First, our revenue and EPS growth finished right on track with our guidance. Cash generation was strong, both from operations and from the monetization of non-strategic assets. For the full year, we invested $25 billion in CapEx and spectrum, and then returned another $23 billion to shareowners through our dividend and share buyback programs. We ended the year with really high-quality credit metrics, and our pension plan funding is in great shape. And 2013 was our first year for Project VIP, and we're well ahead of schedule across the board. LTE deployment, U-verse expansion, and fiber to the business. I would tell you it was a home run as a home run year by our network operations group. In terms of LTE coverage, we said we'd get LTE to 300 million people by the end of 14. We're already closing in on that number. We expect to be essentially done by summer. John's going to give you the details, but growth on these platforms was very strong. Mobile data is now a $23 billion revenue stream, and it's growing at 17%. U-verse is more than $13 billion of annualized revenues, and it's growing at 28%. Strategic business services are now at $9 billion in a run rate, and the growth ramped throughout 2013, and it hit 17% in the fourth quarter, and we expect this growth rate to step up again this year. And we've rolled out a number of new technology solutions. We're having terrific success with our AT&T NetBond service, which combines our VPN network with cloud services from companies like IBM and Microsoft. And what it does is gives customers a secure connection to the cloud that they can't get on the public internet. Our mobile business solutions continue to scale. Digital Life and Connected Car are off to strong starts. and we're very enthusiastic about No Contract Wireless. We expect the Leap acquisition to close by end of the first quarter, and we're convinced that putting the Cricket brand on top of the AT&T network is going to shake things up in this space. So if you go to slide 5, a year ago I told the team that 2013 would be the year of the network for us, and that turned out to be an understatement. Today our network is best in class. We come out on top in all sorts of third-party tests for network quality and speed. In fact, in a broad study of overall performance, and that was done by Root Metrics, we are head and shoulders above the field. The chart on slide 5 shows you how we stack up, and we think it's telling. We're in a dead heat with Verizon for lowest in drop calls, well under 1%, and our other national competitors are at twice the drop call rate or more. And that's the reason we posted record low fourth quarter postpaid churn. On slide 6, you see that our network puts us in a great position for what we think is the industry's next growth wave. There's a lot of talk about the connected world ahead. There are different estimates on how fast it develops, but I think we're all going to agree that it's a big opportunity. And when you combine these pervasive, super-fast LTE networks with the cloud, it changes everything. It changes every industry, every aspect of our society, and the economy. And for this industry, it means we're moving past the era of smartphone wars to rethinking how we work, how we conduct commerce, how we learn and manage our health, and so much more. In fact, the visual on slide 6 captures most of what's taking place. It starts with the ultra-fast connectivity to the cloud. Then smartphones are quickly becoming the remote control for this connected world, and the pace of innovation is accelerating. And this explains why we're being so aggressive with Project VIP and with initiatives like our U-verse 1 gig launch down in Austin. These things give us the ability to drive innovation and then lead in the next waves of growth. And so with that, I want to turn it over to John to take you through the results.
Thanks, Randall. And good afternoon, everyone. Let me start with our consolidated financial summary, which is on slide 7. As Randall said, 2013 was a solid year for our financial results. We grew consolidated revenues by almost 2%, thanks to strong growth in wireless, U-verse, and strategic business services. Consolidated margins were stable, even with Project VIP expenses and record annual smartphone sales. And we grew adjusted earnings per share by 8.2% for the year. Looking at the fourth quarter, we finished the year with an exceptionally strong earnings per share performance. Reported EPS was $1.31. However, when you exclude one-time adjustments, earnings per share for the quarter was 53 cents, a 20% increase from a year ago. Adjustments include an 89-cent gain from the year-end mark-to-market change for our benefit plans. The gain was driven by an increase in the discount rate, as well as strong performance of our benefit plan investments. And a 2-cent gain from the sale of some American Mobile shares was also one of the adjustments. We also saw 7 cents of pressure from costs associated with an early debt repayment and a 6-cent charge for costs associated with employee retirements, specifically an early retirement program that Randall had mentioned. Our solid cash flow and strong balance sheet also allowed us to be aggressive with our share buybacks. We repurchased more than 366 million shares for the year, returning nearly $23 billion to the shareholders through dividends and share repurchases. And since we began our buyback program at the beginning of 2012, we have bought back 737 million shares, or about 12% of our outstanding shares. All in all, we turned in a very strong financial performance for the quarter and for the year. Now let's look at our operational performance for the quarter, starting with wireless. Revenue and ARPU are on slide 8. Strong wireless revenue growth was driven by the network strength and by data-hungry smartphones and tablets. Data is now a $23 billion annualized revenue stream, and it's continuing to grow, growing at nearly 17%. That helped drive 4.8% service revenue growth, and total wireless revenues were up 4.5%. Postpaid ARPU growth was strong. For the 20th consecutive quarter, we saw total postpaid ARPU growth. That's a record unmatched in the industry. And our postpaid phone-only ARPU increased by 3.9%. And that's growing off a much higher base than anyone else. We did have some adjustments in the quarter that bring the run rate closer to 3.7%, but either way, a very impressive performance. Our phone-only ARPU includes smartphones, but also includes our lower ARPU feature phones and wireless home phones, which makes this growth even more impressive. Now, let's move to net adds and churn. The details are on slide 9. Our churn story is nothing short of exceptional. In a quarter where we saw increased competitive activity, strong seasonal promotions, and competitive offers targeting our postpaid base, we turned in our lowest ever fourth quarter postpaid churn, a record of 1.11%. We're very proud of that. This helped drive a solid quarter of postpaid gains with almost 600,000 net adds, including nearly 300,000 smartphone subscribers. And overall, we added more than 500,000 branded smartphones in the quarter, both postpaid and prepaid. We also added about 440,000 branded tablets as well. Network coverage and quality is the top reason customers choose AT&T. And thanks to the high performance of our 4G LTE networks, we have been very successful in attracting and keeping high-value postpaid customers. We're also taking steps to address the more value-conscious customer. Competition for these customers is intense, but our network gives us an important advantage. On the postpaid side, we have several initiatives underway, including new mobile share value plans and other targeted promotions. In prepaid, we have made steady progress in adding smartphone subscribers. In the fourth quarter alone, we added more than 230,000 prepaid smartphones to our network. That gives us a base of more than 2 million prepaid smartphones. And ARPU for these customers is more than 70% higher than our non-smartphone prepaid base. And once the lead transaction is approved, we will be an even better option for value-conscious consumers. We believe the Cricket brand on our network will be a great combination. Now, let's take a look at our growing smartphone base. Those details are on slide 10. Smartphones continue to take a bigger share of our phone sales. A record 93% of our postpaid phone sales were smartphones in the fourth quarter. That increases our postpaid smartphone base by 1.2 million. For the full year, our postpaid smartphone base grew by nearly 5 million subscribers. Overall, 77% of our postpaid phone base are on smartphones. That compares to about 70% a year ago. Smartphone sales were strong, 7.9 million in the quarter, and data usage for smartphones continued to rise, increasing by more than 50% year over year. We haven't seen an incredible response to AT&T Next, especially when we introduced the new mobile share value plans, and sales improved throughout the quarter. Overall, more than 15% of all smartphone sales during the quarter were AT&T Next sales, with a sales percentage in company-owned stores much higher. These strong sales reinforce our belief that focusing on what the customer wants is the right move, whether it's a new device every year or the ability to take advantage of bring-your-own-device service plans. We need to continue to focus on the customer. AT&T Next did impact our cash flows since we are financing the handset, but that's all right. We know these customers, and we know their credit profile. Overall, this program is a great value for both our customers and us. In the quarter, we we reached 7.1 million mobile share accounts. Those accounts include more than 21 million postpaid subscribers, or about 3 subscribers per account. Take rates on the high-tier data plans for both mobile share and tier data customers continue to be strong. In the last year, the percentage of customers on those plans has nearly doubled, growing from 13% to now 24%, with about a third of the mobile share customers on plans of 10 gigabits or higher. At the same time, mobile share value plans are attracting customers who may not need such large data buckets. The new plans offer customers more savings and provide no annual service contract options, giving our existing and new customers even greater choice. Now, let's talk about wireless margins. Those details are on slide 11. Let's start by taking a look at the full year. For 2013, our wireless EBITDA service margin was 41.3%. That is a 170 basis point increase from a year ago, even though we sold more smartphones during the year. There are a number of reasons for this improvement. Revenue growth was solid throughout the year, thanks to our expanding smartphone base and increasing data usage. Second, the strength of our network makes a difference. We're seeing outstanding speed and reliability performance and greater efficiencies as more and more customers upgrade to LTE devices. More than half of our smartphone base are now on LTE-capable devices. Our new upgrade policy also added a positive impact on margins, as did strong AT&T Next sales. In the fourth quarter, wireless EBITDA was nearly $6 billion, an impressive 35% increase over last year. And wireless EBITDA service margin was 37.4%, also much higher than a year ago. When you look at the full picture, this was a very strong wireless quarter for us, from churn to smartphone sales to margins to network performance. These solid results in a hotly competitive environment gives us confidence as we look ahead. Now, let me turn to our wireline story, starting on slide 12. U-verse finished the year just as it started, with strong subscriber gains, increasing penetration, and growing revenue. In fact, U-verse helped drive consumer revenue growth of nearly 3% in the fourth quarter. U-verse continued its record of strong high-speed broadband gains. We added 630,000 U-verse broadband subscribers in the fourth quarter and 2.7 million during the year. U-verse now represents more than 60% of our total broadband base. These subscribers not only have a higher ARPU, but churn is significantly lower as well. We believe we've hit a tipping point with U-verse broadband. With the growing base of U-verse subscribers, we feel confident that we can grow broadband subscribers even stronger this coming year. We also continue to excel in video. While some companies are excited about actually gaining customers, we added almost 200,000 subscribers in the quarter and nearly 1 million for the year. Plus, we had our lowest TV churn ever in the fourth quarter. That tells us customers not only want U-verse, but they stay with us once they get it. And we expect to maintain this momentum. We continue to add new features, such as TV Everywhere, which allows customers to view programming on smartphones and tablets inside their home and out, and increased broadband speeds. Nearly two-thirds of the U-verse TV footprint can now get speeds up to 45 megabits per second. U-verse is now a $13 billion annualized revenue stream, growing at 28% year over year, and makes up 57% of our total consumer revenues. U-verse was a solid story from start to finish during 2013, and we expect that to continue as we expand U-verse coverage with Project VIP. Now, let's move to wireline business, which you can see on slide 13. First, let's start with some of the really good news. Strategic Business Service continues to be a bigger part of business services. Those service products such as VPN, Ethernet, cloud, hosting, and other advanced IP services now make up more than 25% of business wireline, and growth is accelerating, up more than 17% year over year. We continue to see UVerse high-speed broadband growing in the business space. Increasing speeds and broader coverage open the door to new growth opportunities with small and medium-sized customers. We're also seeing increasing momentum in cloud and integrated service offerings. We are one of the top cloud providers in the world and adding scale. For example, we already have more than an exabyte of virtualized storage. Much of this is driven by steps we are taking to move our own business processes to the cloud. Our goal is to be an entirely cloud-based enterprise within the next 3 to 5 years. Our own IT operations are probably the most aggressive cloud operations around. So we're not just selling cloud applications, we are customers, we are users as well. This helps focus us on developing new cloud-based products such as NetBond. NetBond helps our customers safeguard their information by extending their virtual private networks into the cloud, which functions like a normal VPN site and keeps data separate from other users' traffic. And NetBond reduces latency by up to 50%, which means that businesses have access to their data almost instantly. We believe NetBond will drive even more growth. We already are the VPN market leader with a multi-billion dollar annual business, and we had our best fourth quarter VPN growth in years. These growth products helped transform our revenue mix, but we still saw lower revenues in the quarter. Total revenues were down 3.4% versus the year earlier quarter, and were essentially flat sequentially. Business service revenues declined 2.4% year over year. Behind all this are the overall economic trends. The outlook is still uncertain. Customers are still delaying buying decisions. Business starts lag, though slightly better than a year ago. And unemployment is slowly improving, but labor force participation is the lowest it's been in more than 30 years. It's still a slow market, but we are hopeful that we will see an improving economy to get this part of the company growing again. Now let's look at consolidated and wireline margins on slide 14. Even with Project VIP expenses, UVerse gains, and record-breaking annual smartphone sales, consolidated margins remained relatively stable. Wireless margin improvements helped offset this pressure. For the year, our adjusted consolidated margin was 18% compared to 18.2% last year. This pressure in wireline was expected. Much of it is tied to Project VIP and other success-based initiatives. We had almost 1 million new UVerse TV subscribers, and there were trailing expenses from VIP investments, and depreciation expenses were also higher. We continue to take steps on the cost-cutting side as well. This includes the introduction of Project Agile. Project Agile is a major new initiative that is transforming how the company organizes and operates around customers to deliver a best-in-class customer experience as an all-IP, all-mobile, and all-cloud services company. We see considerable opportunity to reduce cost through simplifying processes, standardizing platforms, and making our customer interactions effortless and efficient. Randall will talk more about this initiative in just a few moments. Now let's move to cash flow. Our summary is on slide 15. In 2013, cash from operations totaled nearly $35 billion. Capital expenditures were $21.2 billion as we deployed Project VIP. And free cash flow before dividends was $13.6 billion. This was impacted somewhat by the tremendous success of AT&T Next. We also have been very opportunistic in monetizing some of our assets. This includes the tower transaction with Crown Castle, sales of some of our American Mobile shares, and sales of some of our real estate assets. These items generated $7 billion in cash for the year and nearly $6 billion in additional cash in the fourth quarter alone. All this and free cash flow generated about $20 billion in cash during the year and strengthened our cash position. Our balance sheet remained solid. Net debt edged up during the year. However, our average effective interest rate is down compared to last year, thanks to debt refinancing, early repayments of debt, and historically low interest rates. And a net debt to adjusted EBITDA ratio of 1.73 is well below our 1.8 target and down from the third quarter, even with our Project VIP investments. In addition to investing in our business, we also returned substantial value to shareholders. For the year, we repurchased about 366 million shares for around $13 billion. We made dividend payments for the year totaling nearly $10 billion. This makes our total returns to shareholders for the year right at $23 billion. And in the last 2 years, we returned more than $45 billion, a record unmatched in the industry. Now, before I hand it back to Randall, let's take a quick look on how we delivered on 2013 guidance. That's on slide 16. So how do we do for the year? On an adjusted basis, we expected upper single-digit EPS growth, continued revenue growth in wireless and consumer wireline, and stable consolidated margins, and that's what we delivered. We set out ambitious Project VIP targets, increased them during the year, and still came in ahead of forecasts. We also are excited about the Leap acquisition and how it will support our Project VIP deployment. Once the deal is closed, we'll take a look at how it will impact our cell site build plans and densification initiatives. We continue to generate cash, both through asset monetizations and free cash flow. We also took several steps to manage our debt, helping reduce the cost of debt even as we invested in future growth. And through it all, we remain focused on the shareholder, returning substantial value through dividends and buybacks. Altogether, a solid year during a transformational time in our business. And now we'll turn it back to Randall to talk to you a little bit more about that transformation. Randall?
Okay, thanks, John. I'll close with just a couple of comments on what you can expect from us in 2014. And I'll reiterate what we laid out when we announced Project VIP. And that was that 2014 is our peak year for VIP investment. And our outlook is very consistent with that original plan. We will continue to be aggressive on the network front. We expect to hit our LTE coverage target ahead of schedule this year. We also have a big effort in terms of network densification and cell sites. We'll further ramp our U-verse and business fiber builds. Video, we believe, is a big growth opportunity, so we have a major initiative to make our network the best in class for video delivery for both wireline and wireless. In longer term, we're taking the lead in virtualizing our network to shift functionality from hardware to software. And over time, we believe the payoffs in operating efficiency and speed to market are going to be significant. In terms of our investments in growth, mobile data and U-verse, while they're beginning to scale into very large businesses in and of themselves, are still very early in their growth curves. And the same holds for our strategic business services. As John pointed out, with the Cricket brand on top of the AT&T network, you should expect us to be disruptive in the no-contract space this year. We have a number of new services that will begin to move the needle this year. We'll launch Digital Life into a number of more markets. We've taken a leadership position in connected cars. In fact, we've already announced agreements with GM and Ford, Nissan, Audi, BMW, Tesla, and there are more to come. And as I mentioned, we have a number of new cloud security and mobile solutions for business. And in parallel, we're also re-engineering how we operate. We have a major effort this year to re-architect our enterprise customer experience, rethinking every step end-to-end to dramatically shorten our intervals. Across our business, we're driving to make 80% of our customer interactions digital and online by 2020. And Project Agile is all about streamlining operations around an all-IP, cloud, and mobility experience. And as a first step, about 5,600 employees took voluntary retirement in the fourth quarter. Most of those were management employees. We have additional Project Agile initiatives underway, which will require some investment, but we expect run rate savings in the $3 billion range by 2017. If you go to slide 18, it lays out our financial expectations for 2014. They're very much on track with what we laid out for you when we launched Project VIP some 14 months ago, so there shouldn't be any surprises here. We expect consolidated revenue growth in the 2 to 3% range. This doesn't include any impacts from our planned LEAP acquisition. We expect stable consolidated margins with adjusted EPS growth in the mid-single digit range, and this does not factor in any future share buybacks. And we expect cash from operations in the $32 billion range. 2014 capital will be in the $21 billion range, exactly what we laid out earlier for Project VIP, with savings from our original plan offset by capital for Agile and some new network projects. And again, we expect 2014 will be our peak investment year for Project VIP. And with a step up in cash taxes, we expect free cash flow this year in the $11 billion range, with similar levels for 2015. Post-VIP, we expect free cash flow and dividend coverage to trend back to the historical levels. We also expect cash from divestitures from some non-strategic assets. And all of this is based on some rather conservative assumptions. That includes U.S. economic growth of around 2%. Finally, I know everyone saw the filing we made with the U.K. takeover panel yesterday. I think the statement speaks for itself. We've talked in the past about how we view the European market, and we don't have much to add. Again, we're on track with, and in most cases, we're ahead of what we committed to you when we rolled out Project VIP. We have a lot of opportunity ahead of us. The initiatives we're executing have really good payoffs in terms of growth and cost structure. And 2014 is going to be a very productive year for us. So, Susan, with that, I think we're ready for questions.
Thank you, Randall. Tony, I think we're now ready to open it up for our Q&A session.
Thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone indicating that you've been placed in queue, and you may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. So once again, for your questions, you may press star and then one at this time. And our first question in queue will come from Simon Flannery with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much. Randall, just very quickly, can you just give us some color on exactly why you had to, at this point you had to file with the UK takeover panel? And then, John, on the free cash flow, can you just give us a little bit more detail around the cash taxes and, you know, what the impact is in 2014 and 15, and, you know, what the CapEx is likely to be in 15 to get to that $11 billion number? And is there any impact on working capital from the next program as that starts to ramp this year as well? Thanks.
Yeah, hi, Simon. In terms of the, they call it a 2.8 announcement we made in the UK yesterday, anytime you get a lot of noise around any kind of M&A, it's kind of standard procedure for the takeover panel to contact the parties that are being mentioned and ask them to make a declaration. And so we were contacted over the weekend because of a lot of press surrounding us in Europe and asked to make a declaration, and so we made the declaration we did. I really don't have much more to add than that. It's just a technical requirement by the panel.
Thank you.
Simon, on the free cash flow, I'll take it from the standpoint of we're expecting that $32 billion of cash from operations and the $21 billion range on CapEx is the biggest generator. When you look at the $32 billion and you compare it to this year, the major change is a tick up in cash taxes. Some of it's from our pension funding strategy that we implemented last year. Some of it's from depreciation. It does incorporate continued growth in the next program, and it does incorporate what is effectively pressure from that program, but that is all inclusive. Likewise, if you look at 15, some of the same things are happening. We'll have certainly continued tax pressure, but we'll also have growing, we would expect to have some growing pressure from next, and some growing and strong, I should say, CapEx. But our operational improvements and our revenue growth and our profitability improvements will allow us to cover that and keep it stable and keep us very comfortable in our coverage ratios.
So CapEx is around that $21 billion again in 15?
Yeah, we're not specifically giving guidance on that, but I would tell you that in prior conversations we talked about CapEx being the current year 21 for 13 and then 20 and 20. We've opted for Project Agile and this year, and we will continue to have, I would expect we'll continue to have some Project Agile efficiency investments going forward.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question in queue will come from Mike McCormick with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks. I guess it's good for the industry that the consumers are back to being in the willingness to pay for full handsets, guys. Maybe, John, just your thought on, at least in the current quarter, the impact of Next on churn, and then looking through the tracking of it throughout the quarter, obviously December, a very strong month. Is there seasonality to that, or should we be thinking about, or how should we be thinking about percentage of gross adds or upgrades as we progress through 2014? And then secondarily, your comments regarding Cricket, is there something to be read through that, meaning that some of these folks that are getting EIP contracts in the industry maybe would be better off in a Cricket-type product? Or when you say shake things up, I guess I'm trying to understand what that means.
So let me take a couple of the questions, Mike, and kind of go from there. If you look at where we were at the end of the third quarter, we had about 10% of our handset sales being through the Next program. During the fourth quarter, that grew. For the overall fourth quarter, we had about 15%. Or about a million handsets sold under the Next program, and we came out of the quarter at about 20%. We've continued to see strong sales in the first quarter. So that's what we're dealing with regard to Next, a very good opportunity for our customers. They like the program. They're electing it. They're choosing it, and certainly we like it. While I'm confident that Next has had a positive impact on our churn, I would suggest to you that the award-winning customer service our retail stores give our customers and our really great network performance are also really significant factors in that real reduction in our churn rate in the fourth quarter. I can't point to just one item. I got to tell you that I believe it's the network performance, it's the sales efforts, the quality service, and quite frankly, the good choices, including Next, that our marketing team has put out there.
Hey, Mike, as it relates to the Leap acquisition, you know, we've spent the last 6 or 7 years chasing capacity in our network build, and we've been very reluctant to move down market because we have some very, very high-value customers, high ARPU customers that we're ensuring that we maintain network quality and capacity there. As we make the move to LTE, and as we continue to push the network build and create capacity, it's created a whole new opportunity for us to think about the value segment and the no contract segment. And as we get into the Leap acquisition, as we really study the Cricket brand, we're finding that it is a very, very strong brand. And we really believe that at that end of the market, as you put a no contract type service on top of an AT&T network, our coverage, our quality, our performance, we are convinced there's a real opportunity to grow. We're convinced that we can grow from a couple of standpoints, and that is what we have seen in terms of moving smartphones deeper penetration on postpaid. That play has yet to be run in the prepaid segment to any meaningful degree, and you should expect us to be very assertive and very aggressive to push smartphone penetration in the no-contract space, and to be aggressive as it relates to pricing. We'll be using a different brand. We can do some things that will be disruptive in the market, and we're actually getting more and more excited about it the closer we get to closing in the first quarter.
Hey, Randall, is this sort of just looking at it as a bifurcation of credit risk and understanding some balance sheet risk there as well?
That's exactly what it is, and also giving you the flexibility to do some things in the marketplace with a different brand that you wouldn't do with the traditional brand.
Great. Thanks, guys.
You bet.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.
Thank you. Our next question in queue will come from the line of Phil Cusick with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys, a couple. You know, one, Randall, just to follow up real quick, in your regulatory conversations the last week, have you learned anything new? No, not necessarily about you, but of a U.S. company's ability to buy assets in Europe. whether those are NSA issues or otherwise. And then second, John, given the high payout ratio for 14 and it sounds like 15, should we assume that the days of big buybacks are pretty much over for now? Is there any room to raise the leverage there? Thanks.
Yeah, so, Phil, I was in Davos, actually, and I had an opportunity to meet with several folks that were administrations and policymakers and so forth. And my main objective for last week as it related to those conversations was we have had some business impacts from the NSA revelations. And they have, you know, they've not been inconsequential. We're having customers ask us a lot of questions. We're having policymakers ask us a lot of questions. And it's affecting our ongoing business today, irrespective of anything that might relate to some M&A or whatnot. And so I was really there to discern, you know, what was the attitude and the disposition and try to help formulate our own plans as it relates to those. And, you know, it was fortuitous that the president made his speech the Friday before. I think that speech was helpful in terms of the policymakers in Europe understanding where the administration here, the president, is going on metadata collection and so forth. And so I would tell you it was net-net a productive set of discussions, and I feel like we have a path just as it relates to our ongoing business operations there today.
Phil, let me comment on your questions with regard to buybacks. First and foremost, I'd make the point I'm very comfortable with our payout ratios. Feel real good about our balance sheet. You can see that our debt ratios are well within line and are within our previous guidance, that we've been able to generate strong cash from operations. But quite frankly, we've also been able to generate strong cash from asset monetizations, non-strategic assets, and we still believe we have opportunities there, as the STET transaction, announced transaction, would imply. So I feel very comfortable, not only for 14 and 15, with where we're at on our payout ratios. With that being said, our assumption in the business plan and our guidance that we gave it was not based on additional buybacks. We will continue to buy back opportunistically. I will tell you we have about 160 million shares left on our authorization, so that would give you a gating factor unless our board would give us more guidance. But we feel real good about our payout ratios and where our balance sheet is. It remains very strong.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Our next question in queue will come from the line of John Hodulik with UBS. Please go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Maybe, Randall, could you comment on the competitive environment you're currently seeing in the wireless market? Maybe look out to what you expect and how you expect it to evolve in 14. And I guess specifically with T-Mobile's new ETF strategy, you know, it seems to be the first promotion that really targets family plans. I mean, is that something that you see as more of a significant change in the competitive landscape, or just sort of more of the same promotion that we've seen in the past? Thanks.
Yeah, hi, John. As I mentioned in my opening comments, it was a formative year for the industry. And I would tell you what is probably most interesting to me as we look at what has played out in 2013 and carried into the first month of 2014 is the idea that our customers are demonstrating an interest, desire even, to put more of their money into the handset in exchange for lower monthly pricing. And that's what you see happening in the marketplace right now. More and more customers are moving to, you know, handset financing plans, picking up more of the cost of the handset with a desire to have a lower monthly rate. And so we're seeing that play itself out. And you're seeing kind of the whole market move there. All players are introducing these kind of plans, and our customers are loving it. You heard John talk about the take rates and how in December 20% of all of our smartphone sales were on these types of arrangements. And so, you know, one could say, well, that's great margin opportunity, but then you turn around and reinvesting it back into the customer in terms of better pricing in the marketplace. And so that's kind of working out very interesting. As it relates to the impact on competition, you know, there's a lot of noise, but at the end of the day, we study this nine ways to Sunday, and we've made a lot of moves in the marketplace ourselves, and fourth quarter churn was the lowest fourth quarter churn we've ever experienced. And it just continues to reinforce that you have to be aggressive in the marketplace. You have to constantly have your ear to the ground and attuned to what the customer expects. But you better have a high-quality network experience, both data and voice. And we really, really feel good about what was accomplished in 2013 in terms of network quality. Again, our voice quality is on par with the best in the industry in the United States. And when you look at everybody else in the industry, we are running drop call rates that are half of what the nearest competitor is running. So competitive intensity is going to remain strong. I have no doubt that you'll see that continue. I have no doubt that you'll see us continue all to modify our value propositions. But as I pointed out earlier, I think where you'll see us get most competitive is moving down into the value space with the Leap acquisition and using the Cricket brand.
Great. Thanks, Randall.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question in queue will come from the line of David Barden with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the questions, too, if I could. First, Randall, obviously we've had a win for the carriers on the net neutrality space. You guys are out at CES with some of your sponsored data trials visible for the marketplace. You know, obviously Ed Whitaker kind of started this conversation many years ago with the marketplace. Could you kind of tell us how you see the next steps unfolding and when, if ever, you know, we might be able to see a real monetization of this opportunity? And then second, John, just for you on the EPS guidance, two pieces I wanted to talk about. Just one, obviously, we're going to get about 2% benefit year over year from the ending share count relative to the midpoint of 2013. And then, obviously, on the next program, we're going to get a lot more equipment revenue being booked for a fifth of the customers coming in the door than we do under the old plans. By my math, we should see roughly $1 billion more revenue dropping into the EBITDA line, dropping into the earnings line for 2014. That's going to be about another 4 or 5% benefit. So we're already at 7% kind of earnings per share growth year over year before we've even started to work on the business. Could you kind of talk about where the core business is going to go in 2014? Is it a growth year? Is it a stable year as you work on competition? What's underneath the hood for 2014? Thanks.
Yeah. Hi, David. Net neutrality, I just kind of laughed when you made the comment about Whitaker. When was that, like 2002 or 2003, right?
A lifetime ago.
And the industry has come a long way since then. And over the last couple of years, the industry came together and worked and agreed to a framework as it related to net neutrality that the FCC promulgated into rules. We did have this court order. From our standpoint, David, that changed really nothing. It doesn't change any way that we will operate. I really don't believe it's going to change much of what anybody in the industry will do. As you pointed out, we introduced our sponsored data plans, which, you know, the easiest way to articulate it is like 1-800-DATA, where companies may want customers to access their content, and they'd be willing to pay the freight to let those customers access their content. You know, we can't find that violates anybody's net neutrality rules that are in place today. It's perfectly voluntary. It's open to any company that might want to do this. You think about the kind of situations that are driving this on, and it's very interesting. So, for example, United Health. They have a number of young mothers who are not getting good education and training on prenatal care, and obviously it's driving their health care costs up. United Health says we have a lot of information, a lot of data. We want to motivate these young women to come watch and to take advantage of. And they said if we would like to pay for it to make sure that there are no constraints, nothing gets in the way from these women taking advantage of this training to address their prenatal care. And so they said, we're willing to pay for that and provide motivation and incentives for these young mothers to take advantage of that. I'm struggling to figure out what the argument against those types of services would be. So you're going to see these evolve. I have no doubt you'll see them scale. It's the same way the long-distance industry grew and scale. And I think mobile data and mobile internet services will follow some of the same paths. So stay tuned, but I don't see the court ruling on net neutrality changing anything in terms of how we operate or most anybody else in the industry for that matter.
David, on your second question, a couple of quick comments. We're giving guidance in that EPS growth in the mid-single digits range. You're right, we will get a little lift underneath our wings from the buybacks that took place in 13. We're not assuming any more in 14. In the wireless space, we do expect some benefits, not only from Next, but also from our 24-month upgrade cycle. But I will tell you, some of the customers on Next, while they're electing that, they're also, as Randall mentioned, electing to do to choose the bring-your-own-device pricing platforms. And so those benefits from Next may just may be moving from our service revenues. And you'll see a different mix of revenues with the equipment and service. But we are positive and about the wireless market and about continuing to expand margins. On the consumer side, UVerse is doing great. We continue to expect to see growth. You saw the kind of numbers they posted on video in the fourth quarter and for the year, as well as high-speed broadband and with additional footprint. We're real optimistic there. Business is still challenged, but strategic services are going great. The base is up to 25%. We expect it to expand. And with that expansion, should come an opportunity to expand the growth rate. So what are the challenges? Well, the challenges are an overall slow economy, a lack of investment in the, by the private sector in the U.S. economy. And quite frankly, we still have, well, we've made a lot of progress in our voice, legacy voice headwinds. And we brought that from what it was in 2011, about 22% of our revenue base is now down to 17%, and in the fourth quarter, down to 16%. We still have to overcome those challenges in a low employment, slow economy environment. When you put that all together, we're optimistic about the year, but we're at that mid-single digits guidance.
Got it. Thanks, John. Thanks, Randall, too.
You bet. David, I would just add on that, you know, if we can get some type of U.S. economic growth in that 3-4% range, it changes the equation for a lot of us. And I'm hopeful. I'm not yet optimistic, but I'm hopeful. And you can assume that we, AT&T, and the business community in general are going to be pushing an agenda. I hope to hear the president speak on several of these issues tonight. First and foremost, business tax reform. I just can't think of anything that would move this needle faster and to a greater extent than business tax reform. And I do believe the administration and Congress are all supportive. Here's an area where everybody has coalesced, and it seems like it's ripe for getting done. Trade is obviously huge, and immigration reform. Everybody's talking about these. Everybody in Congress and the administration is expressing a desire and a need to get this done. If you could just get a couple of these done, I think it takes us 2% to a 3% plus growth profile, and that does change our view of this as well.
Thanks, Randall.
Thank you. Our next question in queue will come from the line of Joe Mastrogiovanni with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thanks. John, you've been able to find opportunities to monetize some non-core assets. Do you see any additional opportunities as we move forward, and how should we think about the use of the capital from these types of transactions?
So I think, Joe, thanks for your question. First and foremost, we're always looking for opportunities. The most recent example of that was the announcement of the Southern England Telephone transaction, that $2 billion in transaction we expect to close at the end of the year. I will tell you, we'll continue to look at things like real estate like we did last year and other opportunities. In a company of our size with a $250 billion balance sheet, and a company that has the history, you know, 100-year-old plus company, we have opportunities, and we will continue to search those out. And as some of the economics on real estate and other things improve, we're optimistic about those. With that being said, we're going to keep our balance sheet strong like we always have. We're going to keep our credit metrics strong as we have, and we're going to be opportunistic with the use of that cash. We feel good about where we're at. Feel good about our, how we've treated our shareholders and our ability to continue to keep them in the forefront as we invest for our customers and our employees.
And do you think this could maybe give you an opportunity to ramp some of those buybacks as we've seen it slow over the last couple quarters?
Well, certainly all of those things would be taken into account as we make those decisions. But I do want to make sure I'm clear on the guidance that for next year, our EPS guidance did not assume a ramp up in the economy and did not assume any buybacks. And as we've said before, we're going to be opportunistic with our buybacks and make sure that they are done from a position of strength as we have been doing, as we continue to remain with a strong balance sheet.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question in queue will come from the line of Adam Ilkowitz with Nomura. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Just one question on the balance sheet side. You had made a move on the pension plan to fully fund that. I wanted an update on the preferred equity contribution, if you could. And then on the wireless side, the postpaid gross additions, I know that this is a tough quarter with some of the moves that were going on, but I was wondering if on the high-end postpaid side you were looking to accelerate sales in any way. Thanks.
So first and foremost, with regard to the pension plan funding, we continue to work with the Department of Labor for an official approval. Those that process continues to go well. For purposes, as we had filed and we publicly stated, we have made the contribution. We did that in the September of last year. And when you look at our audited pension financial statements this year, they will be essentially fully funded. They will be at the 99.8 or 100.2% funding. So that's gone well. We do not have an official ruling yet from the DOL, but we're still very optimistic about it. And quite frankly, I will tell you, I'm complimentary about the work and the way we've been respected by the individuals at the Department of Labor. They've been good to work with. With regard to gross additions and our wireless, we're always looking to be competitive, and we're always looking for opportunities to continue to grow what has been just a great business for us. As Randall said, we're continuing to respond not just to competition, but what our customers want. And we'll continue to focus on offerings and products that allow us to do that. I will tell you, though, we're looking at sustainable growth, profitable growth, growth that fits for both us and the customers, not growth that does not make economic sense long term.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question in queue will come from the line of Michael Rollins with Citi Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the questions. First for Randall, if you go back to your page 6 diagram, how much of your strategy do you want to be the enabler of these applications with your network versus outrightly owning these applications with scale when you compare it to the a la carte alternative? And John, if I can throw out a question, back on the dividend coverage, how should investors be thinking about the coverage aspirations that AT&T has on a few-year view, and how should they think about how much comes from growth in revenue or cash flow from operations versus lowering the CapEx over time? Thanks.
Michael, on enabler versus owning the end user or the finished service, answer to the question is yes, and it depends. As you think about LTE and cloud capabilities, there are some where we will take it all the way through to the finished service. Classic example of that would be home security and home automation, the connected home. That is a finished service that we're monetizing at the retail level. As you think about our NetBond product, we're enabling other people via APIs and capabilities to monetize through us, providing a secure environment for cloud services. By that same token, we have our own cloud services out there that we're selling at the retail level as well. You can think about in terms of health services. You know, we're opening up APIs, allowing companies to come and put their devices and their applications and use our network services to accommodate that. We think this is a rather sizable opportunity. Payments, mobile payments, you know, we're working with a JV, ISIS, where Verizon and T-Mobile are partners in that JV. That is a finished service. So it's going to cover the gamut. We think the opportunities are really large. The connected car is probably going to be both. There are going to be subscribers who the car is like an additional device they add onto their data bucket. But the auto manufacturers will look at us as a platform, and they will sell finished services in the car through our connected capability as well. So, again, the answer to your question is yes, all of the above.
Mike, with regard to the dividend coverage, once again, let me reiterate, we feel very comfortable about the dividend coverage for 14 and 15. But with the continuing revenue growth, with the opportunity that the VIP network platform provides us not only for products and services and revenue, but quite frankly for efficiency through Project Agile. We believe that you will see us trend fairly quickly to more historic levels of dividend coverage, and quite frankly, I'm opportunistic that we can get to better than that. I think that's a mix of efficiency from the payoff from Project VIP and the high-quality IP networks, as well as the revenue growth that comes from those products.
Thank you.
Tony, I think we've got time for just one more question.
Thank you. And that question will come from the line of Amir Roswadowski with Barclays. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, folks.
Good afternoon.
On the churn front, you know, I mean, certainly you reported the lowest fourth quarter postpaid churn coming out of you folks. Given some of the recent initiatives, in part launched by you folks during the quarter, for carriers to absorb ETF fees, should we expect your postpaid churn and perhaps the industry's, for that matter, to go up here, given, you know, what seems to be more increased flexibility to shift between competitors?
Good question. Thank you for that, Amir. Let me give you a couple of comments. First of all, our churn improvements were not just in our wireless business, and we're very proud of those, but I need to point to you that we had really great performance in U-verse churn and consumer video churn, so we're really pleased with churn and an overall customer satisfaction with this network quality we have. Secondly, I will tell you that when people talk about things like porting ratios and offers for ETF, the real measure of a network and the real measure of customer satisfaction is churn. Porting issues or ETF issues are a subset of that. Historically, about a third of our customers who made a change ported their ratio, ported their numbers. About two-thirds didn't. And so when you have unusual and sometimes uneconomic offers to pay someone's ETF, you may shift porting ratios, but that may not have any change to the total churn picture. It's just a difference between those customers who made a change with or without porting. We certainly have a competitive environment, and we're certainly going to keep our eye on the ball and make sure that we continue to respond to what customers want in a sustainable process. But we think those are the driving force, those choice matters are the driving issues, not necessarily just one ETF offer or another.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And then one last question, if I may, on the release from yesterday. Has anything changed in terms of your view on the regional market outlook for Europe over the longer term with respect to the potential opportunity for mobile data for someone who opts to invest in the region? Thanks very much.
No, our view of Europe hasn't changed at all.
So with that, let me take this moment to thank all of you for being on the call with us today. We've closed the year with a solid performance, a solid quarter, and a solid year. Our growth platforms are going strong. Our wireless network is best in class, and our capital structure is solid. And as Randall mentioned, we are positioned well for 2014, focused on growth. We have a solid, achievable plan that will help us get there. Thanks again for being on the call, and as always, thank you for your interest in AT&T. Have a good evening.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude your conference call for today. We do thank you for your participation and for using AT&T's executive teleconference. You may now disconnect.